I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 65 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off this week are Justin and Carolyn of Old Movie Time Machine. Welcome back to the show once again, guys.
Hey, Rob. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great. So, Minute 65 begins with Martini continuing to be ecstatic and ends with the Martinis being welcome home. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about what this entire minute's all about. This entire minute is going to be a moving minute. You know,
that's right.
Which it made me wonder, and I didn't do any research on this. It made me wonder if you can think of any other movies from this era that showed people moving, and I couldn't really think of any, you know, offhand. I'm sure there are
from this era. Yeah, no, I mean, the biggest pop culture move that I can think of off the top of my head is like the Beverly Hillbillies, but that's 20 years later,
right? Yeah. I mean, I was thinking the Money Pit, but again, that's 40 years later.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can think of would have been anything like Grapes of Wrath or, you know.
Was the Grapes of Wrath, was it really moving, or was it more that they were just, you know, spending the entire time driving across the country with car with grandma in the rocking chair on the top or something like that? No.
Right. Mm. Exactly. It wasn't actually like a happy move where we're staying in our same community, right? Moving up.
Well, they're not necessarily staying in the same community. They're staying, within the confines of Bedford Falls, you know. But where specifically is more of a question. Like we don't know geographically the difference between Bailey Park and Potter's Field. You know,
that's true.
Later in the movie, we get a look at a map from afar, but we can't really tell, you know, where the two places are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just see the plots kind of colored in as they expand. I was just really grateful for the Martini family because it's a short move. You know, that's the ideal move. It's not some cross-country type of thing. Now, Carolyn, I don't know about you, but seeing this scene did bring to mind, now Carolyn and I are siblings, as we've previously talked about, and we're also Italian Americans, and our great grandparents came over and moved around the United States. And it just kind of seeing this sort of brought to mind, like, oh, I wonder if this is what it was like, this level of, you know, new house America excitement for our ancestors, you know, who moved from mines in Colorado to downtown Detroit, Michigan. You know, had to pack up their truck, presumably, and their goat and their travel chicken and all of this. So, again, it's a very American scene to see.
But I'm glad it wasn't cross country.
But what year did they get to Detroit? Do you remember?
I believe it's 1941.
Oh, okay. No, so, see, my family didn't get to Detroit till the 70s. So, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Into the suburbs of Detroit.
So, did you guys hear about the goat connection, though, in this particular scene?
No.
So Frank Capra is another Italian American, of course, and Capra means goat. So apparently the IMDb tells me that means something, that there's a goat in this scene as well. But I think that, you know, they're implying that this is also Capra's, you know, version of this American dream.
So you're saying they were moving Capra with them, or
That's possible. Yeah, I don't know. Or if it was just pure vanity on his part. Like maybe they should have been holding him.
And I'm wondering if Capra chose the Martini family and not like, let's say, like an Irish family, which would have, you know, kind of in the same time period of folks that would have been upwardly mobile.
Yes. Right. I mean, according to to continue with the research that Justin did, basically Capra based the martinis on his own family who immigrated in 1903 from Sicily.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. So this is probably a very personal scene for him then.
Yes. Yeah. That's my assumption too. Now, they also trick us a little bit here because, you know, first we have, you know, at the beginning of this minute, we have Martini continuing and by saying, me, Giuseppe Martini, I own my own house. And then he says, no more live like a pigs in this potter's field, which is something that you referred to yesterday, Justin,
yes.
About the fact that...
Yes,
that,
he is over it very quickly.
I just love the fact that they call it potter's field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we all know what a potter's field is. Potter's field is where you bury people that you don't know who they are, basically, yeah, or who don't have the money.
Right. They don't have the money to do...
They don't have the money to pay for it, exactly.
So they have to do a mass grave.
That's right. And then, you know, we hear George say, someone say, Mary, Mary. And then George says, Mary, come on, bring the baby. So they make us believe right from the start that this is their baby. Oh, even though it's not.
I didn't even think of that.
You know.
That makes sense, yes.
You know, it's a way to fool us into believing
right.
that's what's really happening here. And then we will find out shortly that it's not their kid, you know, that type of thing. And
right.
I mean, first of all, Martini is completely ecstatic. You know, he's over the top. He's so happy that he's moving. And the great thing about it is if you look, everyone else is moving. He's not. he's not carrying anything.
No.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
He's supervising.
Right. That's yeah, right. He's not even supervising because he's basically, you know, telling the neighbor, this is great. I'm out of here. You're no longer going to be my neighbor. You know, I don't need a septuagenarian, you know, wearing denim, you know, living right. next door.
The cool guy.
The cool guy. Yeah. Yes.
Rob, do you have any information on who the background players would be or like how extras worked back at the time? Because I just love to see this diverse collection of realistic looking human beings in my major motion picture. It's just a joy to see. It's the whole spectrum of America all in one shot of all these happy people helping the Martinis move. Do we know like if they are just like people who were around or if they were cast or what the deal was?
I don't have that much information about it. I have heard that, you know, Capra was taking people off the street just to play like little okay. roles. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we don't know who any of these people are, so I can't really talk about that. I mean, in Die Hard 2, we talked about the fact that I don't know how well you remember the movie, but the guy who – the janitor who opens the door for John in order to get into the luggage area, he's actually a homeless guy that they just found on the street and gave him this job. You know, it was his only movie credit ever, and, you
okay.
know – and it's because they just saw him, you know, around the corner and gave him that little job. So here I don't have information about the specifics about all these different people. The two people that I do have information about are the Martinis themselves.
Oh, okay.
You know, the two actors who play them. So Mr. Martini mm-hmm. is played by an actor named William Edmonds, even though in this movie he's listed as Bill Edmonds, right? He was born
the classic Italian surname Edmonds, of course.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
He was born in 1885 and passed away in 1981, meaning he lived to the age of 96.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Mr. Martini.
That's right. And he was basically approximately 60 when they filmed this movie.
Okay.
He actually stopped acting in 1959, 14 years after this movie was, you know, came out. He has 97 IMDb credits. His real name is Michael Pellegrino,
huh.
which is probably a little more Italian because he was born yes. in Italy.
Yes. Okay. Okay. That makes more sense. Yeah.
Right. He's been in, you know, a lot of different movies, but he mostly plays, you know, dark or Latin characters, Spaniards, Mexicans, Frenchmen, Gypsies, Arabs, Polynesians, and other exotic nationalities. And he was considered a poor man's J. Carroll Nash, who was...
Oh, okay. I know him.
Yeah.
Carolyn, you know him too. He plays Daniel the Hunchback in House of Frankenstein.
Oh.
He falls in love with Maliva, the gypsy girl. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
But that makes sense. I could see the the casting crossover then. That would make sense.
Right. So yeah, that's pretty much the main information. I couldn't find out why, you know, what happened after 1959 that he stopped acting. Don't really know the information about that. Now the woman who plays his wife, her information is even more fascinating than his. So her name is Argentina Brunetti. Argentina, right? Okay. She was actually first of all, the reason her name is Argentina is because she was born in Argentina, which is hilarious because
very appropriate.
Because I mean, the story that I found about this is that she was basically born in Buenos Aires, practically on the stage, because her mother was a famous Italian actress who was performing as part of a South American tour. And basically, you know, when she was born there, she claims that she was very happy that she was, you know, that she came out, you know, while they were in Argentina, because she said the next two stops were Uruguay and Paraguay. And, you know,
oh,
okay.
Yeah. I don't think she wanted to be, named either of those things.
Yeah, the less melodic sounding. They don't trip off the tongue in quite the same way.
That's right. So she has 173 IMDb credits. This movie was her debut.
Oh.
Okay. She was born in 1907. She was her film debut. She was born in 1907 and passed away in 2005 at the age of 98. So both the Martinis, you know, lived into their late 90s. Still pretty impressive.
And there would be considerable age gap between them?
Yes, there is. She was 39 at the time, so there's about a 20-year difference between them.
Okay. That's not as much as I would have thought. But but still, that's okay.
Yes. Now, two very interesting things that I found out about her is, one is that one of the things that she did sort of as a hobby was she would go around interviewing other actors around the, you know, throughout her career. And she actually became a member of the HFPA, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Okay. Wow. And
the Golden Globes.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And she's one of their founding members, along with her husband. I think he was an Italian writer. But the most interesting thing that I found is that she had a website up until the time that she died. She hosted a weekly vlog on the internet where it was called Argentina Brunetti's Hollywood Stories. And she would talk about the Hollywood of yesterday, today, and tomorrow with photos of her with a whole bunch of famous people in the entertainment industry. Cool. And she was in the process of writing a novel about her grandmother when she died. You know, and again, she died at the age of 98. So, you know, we talked yesterday about wishes. I mean, she kept busy all the way to the end.
This is incredible news. Is this content still available? Like, is this on YouTube?
I believe it is. I believe that there is a website, www.argentinabrunetti.com.
Argentina having a website. Good for you. You go.
And apparently her son has carried on the website over the years.
Okay. Wow. Well, maybe we should reach out to him as well. Fantastic. I had no idea. That's great news.
And actually, when I go to the website, it is no longer available. So you can buy it. But the website, do you know the website is for sale for almost $3,000?
Wow. Okay. It's reasonable, maybe? All right.
I don't know. But you maybe can try and find it. I don't know. Maybe. Well, let's put it this way. If she was 98 when she passed away almost 20 years ago, and her son took over the site, okay, my assumption is her son was no spring chicken at the time either. So,
right.
I guess that's true.
You know, yeah. So it's possible that, you know, it didn't continue on for that much longer. I don't know.
Well, Yeah, props to him for maintaining it at all, if he did. I mean, also, that's right. Like,
well, think about it. If he's 98 and she has a website, so, you know, what's, you know, having a 70-year-old guy keeping a website is not a big deal comparatively.
I'm impressed. I don't know. It's, yeah, something else. Those Brunettis, online mavens. I had no idea.
That's right. And basically, you know, it continued. Scene continues with you know, we hear Mrs. Martini say, "This is like a dream." And then George says, "I'll take the kids in the car." "Oh, thank you, Mr. Bailey. Thank you. All right, kids, here, get in. Now, one at a time, get right up and seat there. Get right up on the seat there. Sit down there. Here now, get the dog now. That's it. Go to everybody. All in." did you guys count how many kids the Martinis have?
No, it was like a clown car, though. It was an incredible amount of human beings being trafficked.
Like the Italian American families that we come from. I was just like, well, I don't know, it's probably at least
our father was
12.
One of 11 children, so yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yep. We just assume.
Yep. Seemed totally normal for us, for sure.
Right, okay. All right, that's fine. I mean, I only counted 4 plus the baby. And then the dog and the goat, but you know, it's they're also a young couple, you know, they're just getting started,
right?
Right.
So who knows?
He was only 60. I mean, it's
that's right. And she, I mean, she's 39.
Exactly.
So
you plenty know, of good years left for those two.
That's right. Right. That's right. Because one of the things there's a lot of other kids standing around watching them, you know, be so happy that the Martinis are leaving. Or you think they're happy that the Martinis are getting out of the neighborhood?
That's a great question. Or I just assumed that they were happy for the Martinis, but what if the Martinis are terrible neighbors? What if it's just
that's right? It's just, well, come on, they got a goat that's been chewing up everyone's goat noises, everyone's laundry,
right?
And they have these two little dogs that you know, that are going around and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and they basically all clamper into George's car, and. I mean, we see also that there are baskets tied to the sides of George's car to help, you know, take stuff also. It's like, let's save money on moving and have George move stuff up.
They do really make themselves at home with George's car. They really just sort of do what they want with it. Yeah.
I have a feeling, George and Mary offered up to help. So.
Well, they're those types of people, of course. But the Martinis, they did not hesitate for a moment. They were like, "Yes, we will take your car. Thank you."
That's right. And then the Martinis say, "Bye bye, bye bye." George goes all in, and then as the car moves away, we have a musical interlude. Did either of you notice the, you know, what song is being played in the background as they're driving away?
Oh, it's O Sole Mio, right?
That's right.
Yes.
Very good. Now, what do you know about the song O Sole Mio?
I don't know very much, to be honest with you. I just know the tune.
Okay. So it was written in 1898, and it was written by Giovanni Capuro. And the music itself was composed by Eduardo de Capua and Alfredo Mazzucci. And do you know what the title means? What does O Sole Mio mean?
I would guess this is purely speculative, but Oh My Soul or something like this?
Carolyn, any guess?
No, I don't have any claim to foreign languages.
Oh My Loneliness?
No, neither do I, but it's, you know, I looked it up. I didn't say I know it offhand. It means my sunshine.
Yeah, this trivia is all off the dome from you as far as we're concerned, Rob. You just have.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
You just know these things, and we're sticking to it.
Right. Okay, but wait, what does it mean? I'm sorry, I totally missed what it actually means.
It means my sunshine.
My sunshine? Oh, okay, soul, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, what a pleasant message then, to go with a lovely tune.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, I mean, there's a lot of famous performers who have done versions of this song. Andrea Bocelli.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And Pavarotti actually won a Grammy for his version of it in 1980.
Okay. That sounds like him.
Yeah. There are English versions of it also, where Tony Martin in 1949 sung the song called There's No Tomorrow. So they used the melody but changed the words.
Okay.
Yeah, changed the lyric.
And do we know if is this melody sort of a is it an older melody that was sort of formally composed by the people you just listed off? Like, is this an old tune, I'm guessing, that was maybe then taken and sort of formalized in some way? Do we know that?
Not based on what I said.
Okay, okay.
Not based on what I've read.
Gotcha.
You know, again, it was only written in 1898. I didn't find any sources from before that.
Gotcha. Okay.
There's also a big controversy with Elvis Presley about it, because he then wrote, he had a song, It's Now or Never, which uses part of the music for it also. Mm-hmm.
Another great song.
Which obviously causes a little bit of problems. Bing Crosby sung it in he has an album from 1961, 101 Gang Songs.
Wow.
Crosby. I don't know where Sunshine really fits into gang songs. It sounds more like, West Side Story type of stuff.
Yeah, right. In 1960, that's kind of older Bing too. So I can't even conceive of what that would sound like. His performance of that particular Italian folk tune would sound like. That's interesting. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah. And then in 1981, John Schneider had a hit with it. And it reached the number 14 on the Billboard pop charts and number 4 on the country charts.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And two other small trivia tidbits about it. First of all, the opening ceremony of the 1920 Summer Olympics in Antwerp, they actually played this song instead of the Italian national anthem because the band didn't have the right sheet music for the Italian national anthem.
Wow.
So they just played this instead.
All right.
Hey, it's a constructive solution to an opportunity.
That's right. That's right. And the last bit of information is that in the 1980s in England, they would have commercials for Cornetto ice cream, and they would use the music and the melody for it, even though they had different words that were being used.
Okay.
You know, for these commercials, mm-hmm. It was just one Cornetto.
Well, I've heard of Cornetto. So, I mean, that marketing has been successful apparently, but if it's the 80s, so we're looking at like 30 or 40 years since we've had a big O Sole Mio comeback culturally.
So you see, there you go, Justin. There's your opportunity.
This is,
you can go actually, do it.
You're right. I mean, this is, we should be seizing this moment right now and covering this and releasing it and using it for our projects. I think that's what we should.
There you go.
All right. We'll put it on the list.
There you go. And as the music continues to play, we watch the car and truck eventually enter an area that says "Welcome to Bailey Park," which. It's a very interesting sign that looks like, someone just took a few logs and created it recently.
Yeah, it has like a campground feel to it.
That's right. But the truck with all the martini stuff is overflowing.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
You know, I was expecting to see like things falling off behind it.
Yes.
You know, because it's so jam-packed there.
Again, thankfully, it's a short move. It's just across town because... You know, there's nothing worse than like a long distance move when you don't know if you're going to see that stuff ever again. You ship it separately or whatever. At least they're in control.
That's right.
They know that we've got our landlord's car and that's what we're using. Or, you know,
he's not the landlord.
Excuse me.
They own their home.
They own it. They own it.
My apologies to the Martini family, of course. Of course.
Right. And then as the car and the truck come into Bailey Park, and then there's a swipe and they change the scene. And the first thing we see is the empty truck, meaning that we've now skipped over having to watch everyone bring everything into the house.
Right. 6 hours later. Yeah.
That's right. You know, it's all being dragged inside. Everything's mm-hmm. being taken care of.
No, Mr. Martini did not lift a finger that entire process. He was just sort of.
No, of course not.
Clasping his hands and, exclaiming a lot about how excited he is. But everybody else did that.
That's right. Exactly. And we see George and Mary now standing outside of their house. We don't know the name of the street, but they live at 4587, whatever the name of the street is, which goes to show that you know, they're expecting a lot of houses in this area. You know, it's not like it's you know, this is house number 10.
Yeah.
You know, this is house number 4587.
Now, my research shows that this is one of two locations that still exists. This house still exists, apparently, in whatever neighborhood it's in.
And does it still have a goat in there?
That I don't know. It did not say. kind of unusual that they wouldn't add that information, actually. But it's apparently this house and then the gym with the floor that separate that covers the pool in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. Those two things still exist, I guess. But this is a nice house. I was really impressed with it. I get the excitement.
Well, come on, it's Martini's house. Yeah. He owns it. Yeah. So.
And also,
you
know,
you got to give him credit for that.
I don't want to miss it, but because we're seeing them out in the daylight here in presentational fashion, but Donna Reed wearing this little baseball cap and scarf, she is so adorable and looks amazing throughout all of this. I just needed to.
Whenever she wears that baseball cap the way that she wears it, she reminds me of Madonna in A League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's how she would wear the hat. So,
that's right. And it's it is the look. I'm all about it. So
yes. Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. And the great thing is if you look at the empty truck, so you see some guy sitting on the end, which I'm assuming is the guy who drove the truck. And the goat is right next to him. So, you know, the goat is not inside the house. The goat is still outside.
Okay.
But, you know, Bailey Park does not look like a place where you would keep farm animals.
It seems like
that would be my assumption. I don't know.
Probably different zoning regulations or whatever than where they were before. It's certainly a different feeling. So we're not sure. We don't actually see through the power of cinema if the goat has its own room inside the Martini house.
I feel like the goat's gonna have like a shanty or a shack in the backyard.
I would love that for that goat. I want the goat to be happy.
He's gonna have some kind of like lean-to.
A lean-to with a nice tin can to chew on. That's what I'd like to see for that goat.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a corrugated like metal roof.
That would be nice, sure.
Okay. Sounds like fun.
Let's work on that, guys. We can get that done for them.
Exactly. When you go visit the house, then you could check if there's something in the back to tie up the goat.
The goat post, of course. Yeah, I'll look for it. I'll put it on the list.
Right. Because we talked yesterday about the fact that they have what looks like a hen. They must be getting their own eggs. So my assumption is that the goat is there for them to get milk.
Sure. Yeah.
Make cheese. Get milk. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. You know, and later on we find out that Martini actually owns a bar. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe he uses the milk in different ingredients and in different drinks at the bar. I don't know.
Oh, for like White Russian or something like that. Goat milk White Russian.
It could be.
Yeah. Those are exquisite.
Could be. All right. So do either of you have anything else to say about this minute?
I don't think so. I think it's probably in the next minute more so, but I'm sure we probably see it here. But the loaf of bread that Donna Reed is holding looks really appetizing. It's a good, hearty loaf of bread. That's all.
Even though it's 77 years old. Right?
I would still, it looks like it would keep. It's that kind of quality, old world grains. That's what I meant.
All right. I hope your teeth are up to something. Yeah, like that.
Again, I'll put it on the list. I'll let you guys know how it was.
All right. All right. I appreciate that. Well, let me know when you have to go to the dentist to take care of all those broken teeth from eating 77-year-old stale bread.
Yeah. Goat milk bread.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. So the basis of this segment is the fact that over the last 95 years of the Oscars, so there have been lots of controversies, and there are movies that people think should have won, and people think that they shouldn't have won, and you know, everyone's got their opinion on the whole thing. So I decided that what I was going to do is do something a little fun and have all of my guests talk about what movies they think were deserving of winning Best Picture instead of what actually won. But obviously it has to be something that was nominated during the course of that year. So we will once again do this in snake fashion, because I know that Justin is now an expert in snake fashion.
Figured it out.
There you go. And you guys can decide who's going to go first.
Should I go first this time, Carolyn?
Yeah.
It's only fair.
It's only fair.
So should we do this? What do you think? Chronological order? Does it matter? Do you have a preference?
Well, it doesn't matter. I give points for, you know, it's at the end, at the end of the season. So I will tally up and talk about which movies got the most points. Basically it should go from, you know, your number one is probably the one that you're most upset about, the fact that it didn't win. And you know, then work your way down from that.
Oh, okay.
That's what most people do.
I am gonna do mine, but it also works out that way. I'm gonna do mine from newest to oldest.
Newest to oldest.
However you want.
Okay, hey, I like that idea. I'm gonna run with that idea. Newest to oldest. So
yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm starting with the 98-99 Shakespeare in Love year. I'm sure this has been a lot of controversy over this. Not that nothing wrong with Shakespeare in Love. It's a fine film. However, this is the same year that, say, Saving Private Ryan. That's an easy one. Fair enough.
Okay.
Again, no knock on Shakespeare in Love. It's fine. But is it timeless? Do we still think about it? We're still talking about it?
Yep, we are.
Not so much.
Because guess what? I'm talking about it, too.
Oh, okay.
That's
right.
Also the...
Well, no, but you're not necessarily talking about it in the right for the right reasons.
Yeah. So my number five is also 1998's Shakespeare in Love. And yeah, I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. Great movie. But it's also the same year that Elizabeth with Cate Blanchett was nominated.
Oh, yeah.
And if we're talking like, you know, Elizabethan era, like period picture films, Elizabeth was far superior. So in my mind, Saving Private Ryan, yes, also great film, but my vote would have been for Elizabeth.
Okay, great. So what's your number four?
My number four, I'm going to go one year older to 1997, Titanic. Look, you know, best picture. There's a lot of good things, a lot of things we make fun of, I think, about Titanic. I mean, it's a feat of filmmaking. I'm not arguing that. But I think L.A. Confidential would have been my vote for that year for just overall filmmaking, style, costume, music, performances from all the actors. You know, it's another period film, but I think that L.A. Confidential really, that it does it for me.
All right, cool.
And for my number four, I'm going to take it back to 1964, the My Fair Lady year versus Mary Poppins. This is insanity. Mary Poppins wins hands down. Like, this is, of all the egregious ones, this might be the most egregious, possibly. Mary Poppins is clearly better. It's just, you know, my opinion. We grew up as Mary Poppins people. I've seen My Fair Lady several times. I've disliked it every single time I watch it. It just is endless and free of charm, whereas Mary Poppins has everything going for it. From my number three, I'm going to take it back to 1956, which... I just wanted to point out, has three films that are amazing and kind of classics that were not even nominated. The Searchers, Man in the Gray Flannel Suit, and East of Eden. And we know that Around the World in 80 Days won, but that's insane because that movie is kind of dumb. However, one that was nominated and is clearly better is The Ten Commandments, which is lives on to this day. In all of its goofy pomposity, I think it holds up. So there we go.
Okay. All right. That is a nice choice. Hmm. All right, Caroline,
yes.
What have you got for your number three?
My number three, I'm going to 1982, the year that Gandhi, also a very good film, yes, an important film, won Best Picture. But, you know, I was born in the 80s, and if I had been alive to vote in 1982, and in the Academy, I would have voted for E.T. So
I knew exactly that's where you were going.
Right. You know, that's totally a fan moment, a childhood favorite for sure. That's nothing against Gandhi as a film. But
how did E.T. not win everything? That was a cultural phenomenon.
Right. Wow. But also, I mean, just like the special effects, you name it. Yeah, it offers a lot for our filmmaking viewers. But my number two, I'm going to go all the way back to the 60s, 1968, the year that Oliver won. Don't really care, don't really like it. I definitely think of the other nominees that year, Funny Girl should have won.
I've never seen Funny Girl.
Oh my God.
I know.
Well, clearly our mother didn't make you watch it.
It's true. She did not.
I've watched it a million times, and it's Barbara Streisand. Like, I'm here for Funny Girl.
Yeah, never got it. Never got it. But
it was the only time in Oscar history that there was a tie for Best Actress.
Is that right? Who was the tie?
Barbara Streisand tied with Katharine Hepburn. Katharine Hepburn won for The Lion in Winter that year.
Oh,
another amazing film, Lion in Winter. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Yes. So they tied. So I got to see this Barbara movie then, I guess. I mean, if we're talking Hepburn level, all right. It's on the list. I'm nervous, but it's on the list. Okay.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Stabs. She's incredible.
Hello, gorgeous. That's a line, right? Isn't that the thing? Okay. Hello. All right. I know that much. For my number two, I'm going to take it back to 1948. The winning picture for that year was Hamlet, starring Sir Laurence Olivier. You know, hey, it's Hamlet, right? We know Hamlet. It's a pretty famous, pretty well-renowned tale. We know Sir Laurence Olivier. He's one of the finest actors of the 20th century. However, for me personally, this Best Picture award goes to Treasure of Sierra Madre, which is one of my personal favorite films. And I just love it so much. And I love Bogey in it so much. And I think it's incredible. And I think it holds up today. Not that Hamlet doesn't, but Hamlet is Hamlet. I don't know. I'm just not as, it's like doing a cover song, sort of. But Treasure Sierra Madre, that rocketed to the top of the charts on its own merits. And a lot of great catchphrases. So. Now, number one, because again, snake style, I got it, you guys. I would like to go to 1941, and I need to qualify this because the winner for 1941 was How Green Is My Valley, and I have to confess that I've never seen How Green Was My Valley, so I can't tell you. I know, and it's, again, it's another shame that I carry with me. However, this is the same year as Citizen Kane. And I have seen Citizen Kane many times, and I've read and heard many people talking about Citizen Kane for the past, I don't know, my entire life, for the entire past century. So I just feel like maybe there's a chance that Kane was robbed of this particular award. That's just my take. And I'm sorry for all of you How Green Was My Valley fans out there. I will check it out, I promise.
You know that can be remedied in just a question of two and a half hours.
I think I might do it again. I'll put it on the list. Watch How Green Is My Valley.
Did you ever see that? Did you ever see that episode of Frasier where he goes to the video store and wants to rent something, and he's looking for something, and so he asks the guy at the counter, "You recommend anything?" And he goes, "Oh, how about How Green Was My Valley?" And he starts telling him about it, and so Frasier goes, "Oh, that's a great idea," and he goes to go take it, and some woman takes it, who was standing next to him and heard the recommendation.
Oh, no.
She took it, and he got very upset.
Oh, Frasier. Well, another night in with the piano and dad for Frasier. Sorry.
That's right.
Yeah.
So my number one, which has already been mentioned, Justin already did it for me, but it's my number one, 1964's My Fair Lady versus Mary Poppins. And I love My Fair Lady. If it's on, I'm going to watch it. If I come across it in my scrolling, I'm going to watch it. I love Audrey Hepburn. I don't necessarily love Rex Harrison's just
condescending attitude.
condescending, misogynistic. Yeah, unlikable. Like, I don't know how that they get together in the end. I'm still baffled by that. But I love the costumes, you know, the performances, whatever. But Mary Poppins is superior for many reasons. Creativity, costumes, performances from everyone. It's just like so, it's a step above. And not to mention Julie Andrews singing all of her own songs. You know, I mean, she starred in My Fair Lady on Broadway. Like, how could that really win the Oscar over Mary Poppins?
Right.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for both of those lists. Would you guys like to one final time tell everyone where they can find you?
Absolutely. Our show is called Old Movie Time Machine. We are talking about color motion pictures made in the U.S. of A. during the Cold War. And you can find us at any podcasting platform you choose or YouTube. The shows are up there as well. You can email us at partyline@oldmovietimemachine.com. Follow us on Instagram at Time Machine Podcasts. Please and thank you.
All right. Great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook and you can find me on Twitter. So I want to once again thank you guys for taking the time to join me here. And I'm first of all, I'm very happy that Justin finally got to see this movie.
Oh, you know, me too. Yeah,
that warms my heart that I was able to get someone to watch this movie and enjoy it. So
it's added something to my life. So thank you once again. I appreciate it.
So you're saying you also have a wonderful life because of it?
I would say that, which is ironic because I think it's the title that kept me away for so long. It just seems too positive somehow. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know if I believe any of this, but I get it now. I understand people. I get it.
All right. Excellent. So thank you guys for joining me.
Thank you, Rob,
really
for
our pleasure.
Us.
Yes, thank
really
you.
Really appreciate it.
Great. And I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, hot dog.
Hot dog.
You truly, truly did. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.